I think there are a few things that any spiritual practitioner needs to have as their primary GPS system, tracking system. One is that this whole practice is about the thinning and eventual releasing, surrendering of the sense of self. Okay, the realities are just two different worlds. The one with the world of the sense of self, in which separation and isolation and individuation and loneliness and all the accompanying emotional states that separation gives you is the problem. And you can't solve the problem with the problem. You have to release the problem in order for the solution to be there. And really the practice is developing the courage to release ourselves, because we're not sure what's on the other side. We're not sure where we're going or what's going to happen when we permit ourselves to thin. Mostly our culture is about the opposite, thickening ourselves. We even speak about it that way. And more self-prominence, not less. So that's the first guiding post, so that everything we should do should be in alignment with that basic tenet of Dharma. Now I'm going to offer another one that's equally as obvious, but sometimes we forget it. Often we forget it. And that is, the reality should be the most basic thing. It should be the most basic thing. And therefore our practice should be the simplest practice possible. Because if it's anything else, it's not going to show or reveal the most simple thing, the most basic thing. Now that's, just take that in for a minute, because that really does ask something of us other than what most of us do. We keep constructing ourselves instead of diminishing and allowing the most basic thing to be revealed. The most basic thing doesn't need any of your additions, or it wouldn't be the most basic thing. Anytime we add something to it, it's not the most basic thing. So it's the willingness to let what is be what is without any addition whatsoever, for that to reveal itself as the most basic thing. And how we interface with that project of finding the most basic thing will reveal what our practice is really about. If we keep adding, if we keep making it complicated, if we keep bowing to 1,000 different deities, if we have a complex ritualized system, well, how is that showing me the most basic thing? That should be, why, how is this helping me towards the most basic thing? To use that as a governance for all of our practice. I will get to skillful means in a minute, but basically, what does that mean when you sit down? Add nothing to this moment. If I want reality to be revealed, I can't add something to it. I mean, it's so simple when you don't make it complicated. That's not coming from reality. The complication is coming from up here. All the things that I have to do in order to get to the most basic thing is nothing. It should be that logical to us. And if we start practicing in accordance with that, okay, now wait a second here, I'm complicating all this. What's the most basic thing? So when we're sitting, what can we bring that's, what can we ask of reality? How can we light up reality? Awareness is doing it already. We don't have to light it up. We don't have to make it pretty. We don't have to excuse it. We don't have to objectify it. In fact, every time I put a word on the most basic thing, I've complicated it, haven't I? I've made it more than what it is. Right? I've made it to, oh, it's the most basic thing. That's complicating it. So it takes words away. The most basic thing is not wording what we see. It's the life without the word. You see, we're backing ourselves. We're eliminating everything extra. Reality will reveal itself when we have eliminated everything we've added to it. Now just ponder for a moment whether you're practicing in that direction. And mostly you'll find not so much. Because we're not that interested in the most basic thing. We want the easiest thing, not the simplest thing. The easiest thing is to live within our conditioning, because that's what where the mind is an automatic, and we don't even have to show up. Okay? So this requires showing up. Now you say showing up is adding something. No. This gets tricky. Showing up is the most basic thing. So what we're seeing reality from is reality. That's the only way it meets itself. So there's something about the awareness itself that is a guidance for us to determine and see the most basic thing. Because what awareness isn't ours, although we'd love to claim it. It's just there. Once we thin ourselves sufficiently so that we see we're not the generator of awareness, that we're not creating awareness. At first, mindfulness has that feeling that I'm doing it. But that's mindfulness. That's not awareness. Awareness doesn't have a doer. Awareness is just, if you relax deeply enough, you'll notice it, and you stay, keep the mind alert, you'll notice that you'll sink into awareness. And it was all the anxiety and stress and struggle that kept you from it. And mindfulness can be very stressful because you're not being mindful enough. So this backing away from the stress and struggle of our practice reveals the most basic thing. And the most basic thing is quietude, is stillness, because there's nothing there. It's not nothing. We say it's empty, but emptiness is not a good word. It's more incomprehensible or inconceivable. So what is it? Something that's comprehended is understood. Now you've added a whole layer of your intellectual understanding to the most basic thing. That's not the most basic thing. And the most basic thing must be everywhere. There can't be a little bit of reality here and another something over there. It's got to be everywhere to be reality, doesn't it? See, you just kind of logic your way forward here. So it has to be universal. It can't be mind created. Mind is what it does to reality. It creates things. It's a very creative organ. Look around you. All of that's mind created. Everything is mind created. But that's not the most basic thing. That's on top of the most basic thing, what I conceive of as You see? So it has to be everywhere. It has to be extraordinarily simple. But because we're used to making things complicated, like a math problem, x squared, y squared, no, it's the most basic thing. So it requires quietude. It's everywhere. Christ said it, he said, the kingdom of God covers the landscape, but we do not see it as such. That's not a metaphor. That's absolutely the way that he stated the fact. It's the simplest thing. It's the quietest thing. It's not mind-induced because the mind has shut itself off as soon as I get to be quietude. That's the off switch of the mind, is the quietude. And the perception shifts to the simplest thing. The simplest thing isn't being hidden, it's just not being revealed because we want to keep complicating our lives by adding things to it, make it our own. Or because also because many of us don't feel worthy of it, we want to make it like a penance, that we have to do penance in order to get to it. So we make all sorts of austerities that have nothing at all. I'll fast. Okay, you can fast if you want to. It doesn't change anything. I'm not using traditional words intentionally because I want to wake you to the revelation of the new words, which can refresh you. Oh, wait a second. Simplest thing. What does simplest thing mean in my meditation? How can I practice in accordance with it being the simplest thing? And that takes everything away. And that's the simplest thing. And the simplest thing is revealed when we take everything away. Is my mindfulness the most simple thing? No, because I'm governing it. There's a controller there. That's not simple. That's making it very complex. What if I surrender? Not that there isn't a time for mindfulness, or a phase in which mindfulness is very important, because it starts us going. It shows us access. So I'm not discouraging mindfulness, it's just that it's not the most simple thing. And if we're really interested, in reality, abiding in reality, because if we abide in reality, then our life must be the most simple thing. It must be a statement of that. It must be that easy. And with it comes the emotional responses that of ease, like contentment. Like relaxation. See, these relaxation is not something, it's the absence of contraction. So that relaxation isn't something you add, it's something you subtract. Contentment is the absence of, same thing really, it's the mental expression of relaxation. Okay. So just to get you aligned with how this practice unfolds, extraordinarily important. those two facets, selflessness and the simplest thing. There can be guidance systems for us when we lose our way. Wait a minute. Because you always lose your way in complication, making it complicated, or making yourself real. Okay. Now, skillful means. Sometimes I can't disentangle myself to even sense the most skillful thing, the simplest thing. I can't, there's too much unforgiveness, there's too much remorse, there's too much self-betrayal or betrayal of another, lack of forgiveness. It's all, you know, it's coming at you, and we're so caught up in the identification of that process and the hurt that we've had and the tragedies we face that we can't find our way to the simplest thing. It's too obstructed, So then that's all skillful means is meant to do, is to sort of temper it, work our way through this. Find ways to forgive, for self-forgiveness and other forgiveness. To disentangle the entanglement so that the mind can become quieter. It's a way to find our way forward. But they're also, while we're doing that, it feels very much self-involved. The sense of self is very strong. And it's also seen that it's quieting itself through managing all these different techniques called skillful means. And so it gets hooked into its own accomplishment. Because from where it started, it is quieter. And it's easier, and it's more contented life. But it's not the simplest thing, because it's still involved with it. So what is the simplest thing? At some point, you have to ask that no matter what you're doing, to all aspects of your doing. So just to stay on the theme, the first, we moved from growing up involved defending ourselves and releasing the need to defend ourselves. So we started by being very self-defensive, right? So we're so backed in there, we want to protect our image and our idea and what other people's ideas are of me and present the best side of me, that we block reality at every step. We make it very, very extraordinarily complicated. And that's the first phase, what most people are doing in life is defensiveness, guardedness. Intimacy. How many of us are comfortable with intimacy? No, it's too exposed, too vulnerable in intimacy. You see? So the next phase of that, we go from defending ourselves to receiving ourselves, because we see that a life of defensiveness isn't much of a life. So we have to look at ourselves, receive what is there in order for us just to have any bearing upon what is there. So we go from defending ourselves to receiving ourselves. This is the spiritual path. And as we learn how to receive ourselves, comes the third step of how to release what it is that we've received. Because ultimately, we're not trying to build a better self, we're releasing the self that's there. So it's not to release ourselves into a better sense of self, although that happens, it's to release ourselves so that we become the most simple thing. Now I want to speak about how meditation, likely what you're doing, is in conjunction with what I just spoke about. How it's supposed to be used, and how we sometimes complicate it. Because it's supposed to be an avenue to the most simple thing. It's supposed to be an avenue to release, to letting go. So, as I was mentioning today, the first thing is to establish attention, which has a mindful component, and separate that attention from the thoughts that seem to accompany it. So you know that there's the attention and the thoughts about what I'm paying attention to. And within that body of thoughts lies the judgment and how well I'm doing and all of that. Usually there, it's not a complete picture of what's going on, it's just how my doing is back there unconsciously being said as I force myself to do better. So we have to be conscious of everything we're adding to this basic attention. Our personal commentary, you know, all of that, that's secondary to discerning the difference between that commentary and the attention that's being placed. That's very important. Can't stress how important, and that understanding will deepen as your practice deepens if you use it in that direction, because you're coming to a much simpler thing called attention than the complicated array of comments you have about your attention. That's not the most simple thing. This is simpler. This is much, so go towards what is simpler, more simple. Simpler, more simple. Simpleton, I don't know. Okay, so I'm not going this way. That's not helpful. It's just, I'm singing my way through life here. Or as many people do, because they've been practicing so often, they just sit down and let themselves ruminate. Well, that has, there is some skill. I mean, there is some advantage to that in that it kind of empties you out, gives you a period of time in which you're not adding more, but you're kind of just working through the day. But that's not meditation. And that's not really what it's meant to do. But you can do that, and that it's not, it can be helpful, especially if you've had a hard day at work, just sitting down and having a breather. But I'm sticking on the path of the most simple thing here. Okay, so we have a whole bunch of ideas about how spirituality should line up in our need to control it and all of that. So that's going to continue to impart its, but anytime you hear the voice of yourself, ask if that's the most simple thing. And then when you that's cleared out, what remains is to your advantage. Now, one of the things that meditation will show us is the presence and absence of mental experience. So it can be very helpful as experience moves through our mind, sensory experience, past memories, reactivity, all of that stuff, emotional responses, all of that stuff just moves through. The fear, and the reason we often don't let it move through, is what will I be if I don't grab a hold of this stuff? What will I be if I don't build upon what the mind is saying? But if you bring the equation, if you bring the system to your practice and say, okay, first of all, this is about selflessness, so let me just let me experiment a while and not grab a hold of any of this, because that's in a wise track towards releasing myself. And then what I am after enduring the process of it being, of it moving on, let me see, let me be curious about that. Let me be curious what remains of me as I allow everything to flow through me. So that, okay, so now you're getting a sense of the direction that these two crucial elements of meditation allow. Now, what if I let my thoughts go? Because I begin to realize that my thoughts hold time. That time, the thought, is a thought about the past or about the future or about the present. It's a thought. And so, okay, so if I let thoughts go, I need time. First, I need time to let my thoughts go. That's one we use. But also, I, the sense of I, needs time. Okay, so listen to yourself. I need time. This isn't about building upon myself. It's about self-release. So what if I didn't build upon time? Let me try that. Let me try to let thoughts go as they go and see what's there. See what it's like while I'm meditating, not to depend upon time, or not to rely on time, or not to be time-filled. See? Now we're also getting quieter, and we, oh, this is quieter, because I'm not depending upon time, I'm not depending upon my need for time. I'm not depending upon productivity, my need to be productive, because I'm not doing anything except releasing things. But I thought my self-worth was about doing something, producing. Yes, but this isn't about you. So let me try a moment in which I'm not producing. You see the logic, how the logic helps you at each stage? Oh, okay. So let me just stay in alignment to what is true here. All of it. I will be destroyed without my defenses. I have to have my defenses. I can't. I get vulnerable. Okay, so wait. Let's just try. See what vulnerability is like. Vulnerability is called openness. Vulnerable, we say it's vulnerable. It's like we're a fort with a weak wall. No. You don't, when you're not trying to defend yourself, you don't need to be invulnerable. You need to be open, accessible. The wall needs to come down. So vulnerability may be the way forward. And what I find is that many of the counter emotions which make and build upon myself are acts or reactions to being vulnerable. You see? So like when I'm frightened, that's a moment of vulnerability. I don't know what's going to happen. So then as protection against that, which deepens and thickens the sense of me, I'll get angry at what I'm afraid of. And that thickens me. So that's not the way. What if I just opened myself to what I'm afraid of? Now here's a secret. Fear cannot sustain itself in quietude. For a number of months or years, Alan would be a better person to ask, I'd wake up at the middle of the night kind of sweating in terror. And it was a spiritual terror. It was just terror. It was just, I couldn't get my breath. I was having some problems sleeping with apnea and all that stuff. And so I was just like that. And so I thought, okay, I'm not going back to sleep. I'm going to stay awake, which is hard, and deal with this fear. And so there at night, 2 a.m. in the morning, I'm sitting up in bed with my pillow in my back, and I say, okay, I'm not moving. Because if I move, I'm in reaction to fear, so I'm not moving. And when I didn't move, I got quiet with fear. And fear could not sustain itself. So I'm telling you that from personal experience. Fear needs yourself to be afraid. And when you're quiet, there's the thinning of that self it needs to sustain itself. And you can take my word for it, but my suggestion is that you try it. Just be quiet with this. It's hard. I'm not suggesting it's easy. It's hard. But it needs some place to rub in order to catch hold, to grow upon. And so that's an important understanding to have. And say, then you start looking for areas in yourself that can be more vulnerable so that you can expose yourself, thereby thinning yourself, not accomplishing, because accomplishment is in the wrong way. So let me just, what is it like to express who I am authentically? That's really scary. But authenticity doesn't require you. This is key. You don't have to be around when you're authentic. I mean the self, in order to be authentic, the self has to be so thin that there's no self there. Then authenticity, isn't that amazing? So the authentic you is not you. It's the absence of you. And you learn all of that. You see, learning all of that then sets you more and more firmly on the course going forward. It all becomes very, oh, yeah, sure, of course. Of course, it's like that, of course. But then you're working it in a wise direction, not in counterintuitive direction. And what was very helpful for me is that I would take a phrase, like the simplest thing, and I would use that phrase, and I invite you to, if it feels right, to use it in your own life and in your own practice. Let me just live in accordance with the simplest thing now. Just for a while. Just test the water. Or I would take a depiction of what reality looks like, which are transcendent values. Because reality, when it's abided within, there are qualities that the mind feels when it's in reality. The mind doesn't stop, it just gets quiet, but it still has a felt sense of what surrounds it. And so when the simplest thing is surrounding the mind feels different qualities depending upon the actions it's about to take. Like if there's a bunch of scurrying activity, it will find patience. When there's pain in front of you, it feels compassionate. It's the way reality rubs the mind, the mind's response to the simplest thing. Or when there's need at hand and we are in abundance, it just seems here. That's called generosity. Or the life within reality is joyful. It's not laden and deep and dense and dark and contentious. And all of that was what the mind did to reality. So take one of those values, a value, or one that you are particularly appreciative of in yourself that resonates, and say, okay, even though you don't feel you're awakened, live the awakened value prior to awakening. That speeds the process towards awakening because you have jumped aboard the train and are now acting in accordance in body, speech, and mind to the awakening that's inevitable. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. So you can take intimacy. You can take vulnerability. Again, vulnerability isn't vulnerability. It's a very poor word for exposure or openness. Openness is a much better word. Open, let me just be open to this. And each time you take a value like that, you're going against your egoic self. Because the egoic self does not want to be vulnerable, it does not want to be open, it wants to be conclusive, it wants to be prejudiced, it wants to be knowledgeable, it wants to be thick. And so every time you take on a value, a transcendent value, you're on a thinning path. Now you can make it into a thick path by patting yourself on the back every time you're generous, but at some point you're too sophisticated for that. You're too wise. So you say, okay, just let me hop aboard here. Let me see. So I really want to encourage you to do that. I'm giving you, in a very short period of a weekend, what I think was and has been very helpful to my own movement forward. I want to encourage that. As well as words or phrases that keep us in line with the direction we want to take. When we find ourselves all, one thing I've often said to the Sangha, ask yourself in that moment, where is their love in this? Where is their love in this? Okay, you can go two ways with that. You can go, in the absence of this, there must be love, because I don't see it here. That's the wrong way. I warn you, and you're not doing anything to life. Remember that. Emptiness, the inconceivable, wonder. You can't do anything to anything, even the things you don't like. Or you've taken yourself out of wonder and into yourself. So where's their love with this? Doesn't mean finding love in the absence of what's going on. It means finding love in the presence of what's going on. Now you're not doing anything to anything, and you're waiting to see if love is there. That which holds the difficult may not immediately feel like love, but that is love, because it's not doing anything to that which it sees. Any time presence doesn't do anything to that which it's perceived, it's being loving to that which it perceives. Although it may still feel like you're in the middle of hostility. That took me a long time to figure that out. Nobody told me that. Or maybe they did, I just wasn't good timing. Right? So now, okay, so doing nothing to whatever it is I'm feeling truly doing nothing, and that means encouraging it or condemning myself for having this emotion, none of that, is where love is. Doesn't mean I have to act from what it is that I'm feeling, angry or whatever. It just means that it has full permission to be there. With full permission and no additional encouragement, it only has, it's very time limited. Because why emotions don't go immediately adrift is because we keep saying, oh God, here I go again. I'm always angry and, geez, I wish I weren't so angry. My mother told me I was angry and I'm, That's why it stays around, because you keep propping it up. So do nothing with this moment was also a very important phrase that would help me in times of difficulty. Do nothing with this. Do nothing with this moment. Add nothing to this moment. Add nothing to this moment. Okay. That's my encouragement.